Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mudiwa Gavaza, and for today, we're getting into the world of investments, more specifically the world of equity investments, and we're just going to be getting a sense of some of the things that are happening in the market, some of the trends, and we're going to be talking to one of the investment houses just to get a sense of what they are seeing in the market, you know, as they celebrate a couple of milestones, and we're going to try and understand what the current market has, you know, done for them, what it has meant, and, you know, possibly what it could mean for the future going forward. To help us to lead us down the path, we are joined by Charles de Villiers. He is the head of equities over at Ashburton Investments, which is a unit of First Rand. Charles, greetings to you today.
Yes, good day, and good day to all the listeners out there. Thanks for having me on.
All right. So, you know what? I think a good place for us, you know, to begin. Obviously, when it comes to Ashburton, I've already mentioned the association, you know, with First Rand. You know, when it comes to the properties in the group, you know, there's Ashburton, there's the likes of F&B, R&B, you know, and others. But you guys are, you know, at Ashburton and in the equities team, you know, celebrating, you know, the fact that you've had good performance over the last three or so years, different team that has come together. And where I wanted to begin the discussion is simply to ask the question to say, the Ashburton Equity Fund, your performance over the 3 years, what does that tell us about the market over the last 3 years, and, you know, perhaps your performance relative, you know, to that market? And I ask that because I feel like the beginning of that 3 year period is not the same as where we are today.
Yeah, so I think there's lots in there, as you kind of touched on or alluded to, that has gone on over the last 3 years. If you think about the fact that we took over the equity portfolios at Ashburton after a major restructure in October 2021. And if we were just coming out of COVID at that point in time, you know, supply chains globally were under a lot of pressure, which kind of resulted in a big inflation spike globally. Commodity prices, you know, went up significantly during that period, which caused central banks around the world to have to kind of put the brakes on and you know, lift interest rates globally to stem inflation, and after a delay that had the desired effect. And that saw, you know, commodity prices start easing and inflation globally start easing. So there's been, I guess, long story short, there's been quite a multitude of factors that have gone on in a very short space of time, which has kept asset managers globally on their feet, I guess, and having to, you know, readjust and relook at the environment continuously over that period, over the last 3 years, and, you know, specifically in for asset managers in South Africa, which is obviously impacted by probably, you know, other, some other factors that, you know, asset managers in America and developed markets would not have been impacted by. So, you know, we've had our election also over the last year or two, which also had a massive impact on our local market and equity prices. So, yeah, we've, I think, had to earn our keep over the last 3 years is kind of the, yeah, my message to you. And yeah, it's been a very interesting period to manage money.
All right. So let's get a couple of, you know, the metrics understood so that we can position this discussion over the last 3 years. What does that Ashburton Equity Fund look like today versus what it looked like when you took it over?
Yeah, so I think it's a lot more of a focused fund. There's some high-level differences. I think when we took the fund over, it, like many of our peers portfolios, is Reg 28 portfolio that in essence could have taken a very large offshore holding, up to a maximum of 45% in terms of the limits. But during the period that we That we took over the fund, we actually, you know, have focused the fund's investments within the local market in South Africa. Initially, in the first year or so, year or two of having it, we probably had, I would say, between 6 and 10% of the fund listed in offshore assets, which we took through our Global Leaders Fund. We got to a point at the beginning of 2024 where, most of the returns that we've delivered over the 3 years have come from the SA market, and we've actually made a strategic decision to reposition our equity fund as a South African equity building block, and we no longer invest in offshore assets. Now, we understand that for our clients, there is obviously a benefit for international diversification, and there is still an avenue for them to invest globally, but they can do that through our global funds, which are going to be managed in partnership with Morgan Stanley going forward. So there's been a big change, in terms of how we look at just now the local market only. And then probably more importantly is the investment process that sits underneath managing that fund. We've made some major changes to the investment process. Before we got here, our CIO, Patrice Rassou, was instrumental in bringing our head of quants over from Sanlam, who has developed our own proprietary investment database system. So, that we see as key to how we operate the equity process on a day-to-day basis. Very quantitative in nature. It allows for, meritocracy in terms of measurement of analysts and PM's value add over time. And that all goes into remuneration as well. So, we're doing things very differently as to how they were done in the past. We've used a similar recipe in our past life, managing money for our previous employers very successfully. So we know that the recipe works on a through-the-cycle basis. It's added value over the long term. So we're not kind of reinventing the wheel, but we've kind of, repositioned it. We've added some key variables here and there where we think we can improve on the process. But by and large, we're doing things very differently to what was happening, before we got here 3 years ago.
Charles, in terms of numbers, because I know that a key part of our audience, those are some of the things that they would be keen to understand. Whatever you can share, whether it's percentage returns, whether it's assets under management, how big is the fund, at the moment? Obviously, you've contextualized for us that it came from having a heavy weighting offshore, to now being in a position where it's, a pure SA-focused, type of situation. But in terms of some of those key numbers, what are we looking at?
Yeah, so I think not the numbers exactly off the top of my head, but I mean, we've delivered, I think, 14 odd, but depending on which class of fee class you look at, we've delivered about 14.5% per annum over the 3 years in terms of absolute net return. That has exceeded the benchmark on the highest fee class by about just under 1% a year. So, outperforming the benchmark by 1% a year. And then on some of the lower fee class, institutional fee classes, up to close to 1.5% per annum of outperformance. So, that's been a good outcome for clients, which we're very chuffed about. And I think when we took over the fund, the performance on a rolling 3 year basis was in the fourth quartile of peer performance, which is how we're doing relative to the peers in a similar fund category on the Morningstar surveys. And we've gone from being, right at the back of the fourth quartile when we took over to, over 3 years now, the fund is now positioned well into the first quartile at the end of September at the 3 year mark. So, those are kind of the aspirations that when we took over the fund and we had a blank sheet of paper, you ask, well, what would you like to do? Or in 3 years time or 3 to 5 years time, how would you like the fund to be positioned? And I would have probably said to you at that point in time that we would like the fund to, one, outperform the benchmark, so to add value relative to a passive product, which we've done, and then also to move the fund relative to peers from the fourth quartile to the first quartile, which is kind of where we wanted to do. So, I think we've ticked that boxes, those boxes, which has been a great start, to our tenure of managing the portfolio.
And in terms of assets under management?
Oh, sorry, I alluded to fill you in on that aspect. We've got about R1 billion of equity assets under management at the moment. Some of that is in the CIS retail fund, as well as institutional mandate.
When it comes to equities in particular, right, I would say the JSC, if you're to believe some of the headlines that are out there, it sort of feels as if the JSC has been under a lot of strain, especially with the spate of, you know, delistings and that type of thing. And some people point to that type of movement in the market. I personally cover technology, media, and telecoms companies, and we've seen a lot of stocks, leaving the JSC in that particular sector. And we've also seen a number of other big names, in other sectors. But some of that, type of action, how do you think that has fed, into perceptions around the JSC and equities? Because, given your fund's performance, it sounds as if you're quite bullish on the equity story in South Africa.
Yeah, so I think there's a few aspects to that, and I think you're right. I mean, there's no way of sugarcoating the fact that the JSE has shrunk significantly. I think from 1990, it's gone from, I think, 730-odd counters being listed, give or take in that region, to under 300 counters of late, a 60% decline. So, there's no doubt that from an equity investor point of view, that's a negative, because, I mean, we always would like more options available to us to invest in. But, within that decline, there's still a multitude of companies and opportunities within the JSE. And depending on your view of the world in terms of what's happening in South Africa relative to developed market assets, you can still able to achieve some level of international diversification, even investing within the JSE. If you think about companies like Naspers and Prosus and Richemont, Bidcorp, etc., all examples of companies whose drivers are ex-SA and are driven by what's happening in developed markets and other parts of the world, China specifically in the Naspers and Prosus's case. So there is, despite the delistings, there is still opportunity to diversify ex-SA, but at the moment, how we're seeing the lay of the land at the moment is obviously post the GNU and what's happened within the political environment in South Africa, and more specifically around the government's willingness to partner with private sector to solve some of the structural impediments that are holding the economy back, particularly power generation, which was front and center, really, if you think about that a year or two ago with stage 8 blackouts, etc., which in my mind almost pushed them over the edge to start thinking differently about how to solve these issues that are hindering economic growth in South Africa. And that same playbook you will see, obviously have seen of late, is now being rolled across into Transnet, where you've seen the recent unbundling of Transnet and the introduction of private sector participants in various aspects of that SOE going forward. And then I think you've seen the presidency through Operation Vulindlela now start moving its focus into municipal service delivery, crime, and water, which I think for those living in Joburg, I think water is becoming an increasingly urgent predicament that they are in. So I think there's a playbook that's worked in power. It's now looks to be starting to be play out in logistics, which have been two key areas that have been holding back the economy. And I think that you'll see that continue into some other areas of the economy on a go-forward basis. So now what that is doing is giving private sector some opportunities for growth that were never really there over the last decade or two, because we've had we've had a growth problem in SA, and that growth problem has manifested itself with low employment, very low economic growth. I mean, we're even looking for the year ahead for 2%, which we're actually feeling like that's quite a good outcome, which is quite a sad indictment of where we are. But be that as it may, I mean, to see GDP, to north of 2-3% in the period ahead, we need to see gross fixed capital formation come back into the country. And I think there's lots of areas within the economy that need gross fixed capital formation. I mean, just talking about Transnet alone, speaking to the management teams that run some of the private sector logistics and rail companies, I mean, there's arguably between 100 to 200 billion of capital that's required from the private sector to go into refurbing of the Transnet logistics network to get that back to proper working order. There's a few hundred billion that probably needs to, or 100 billion odd that needs to go into the transmission network to allow for a lot of these new renewable projects and other projects to come into the network as well. So I guess from that, there's these new opportunities that we're seeing as being a new vector for growth for many of the South African companies that are listed on the JSE. A lot of those in the smaller mid-cap space are under-researched, under-owned. And you've seen, I mean, post the GNU and the elections, you've seen, you know, a rally in South African equities on the back of investors, you know, kind of feeling what I've just been describing to you, that the, you know, the runway for growth for SA is looking a little bit better than it's, or looking a lot better than it's looked for quite some time. But, you know, now, as we all know, we lived here for a while, so one needs to be careful about becoming too, looking at the world through rose-colored glasses and becoming too optimistic. But I think throwing it all in the pot, I think it's looking a lot better this year than it's looked for quite some time with regard to SA assets and SA equities.
When it comes to that SA equity story, Charles, I'm keen to get your take on what interest rates have done, you know, to equities over the last couple of years, and what you and what we think is going to happen now that the cutting cycle has has begun. What happens to valuations? Do we go back to, you know, some of the some of the bull runs that we saw, through the 2010s? Does SA Inc., at least on an equities front, have room and scope to deliver those types of returns? How do you see that evolving over time?
Yeah, so I think there's a few elements to that. Not just, I mean, obviously interest rates is one element of it, which, as you described, has been, you know, peaked, which put a lot of pressure on the consumer and consumer spending. And we've, you know, going into a rate cutting cycle now. I think the inflation numbers that came out today were again pretty muted and pretty benign. So it gives the Reserve Bank more scope to continue with the rate cutting cycle, which should help the consumer into the next part of the year. So that, together with, you know, two-pot pension withdrawals that we've seen starting in this quarter and probably through to the end of the year, should see the economy receive a decent boost into the latter part of the year. Also, if you think about where we've come from in the year or two past, we've had massive impact on the economy from load shedding, so the base is quite weak too. So I guess, you know, what I'm saying to you is there's a very high likelihood that we go into a decent GDP number in the year ahead, you know, so 2%+, which will be a good outcome. I think to maintain that, you need to see gross fixed capital formation, you know, come back into the economy and be delivered sustainably at a decent level of GDP to maintain that high growth level that we, and that in turn would then flow through into equity ratings and equity, and also grow, you know, equity price and equity returns are a function of one, growth and equity rating and dividends that are paid out to shareholders. So, and I think it's a bit of a virtuous cycle that if you see growth coming back into the economy, that growth will then, the equity markets are forward looking, and the equity markets would then say, oh, these companies are now going into a growth environment. So earnings are likely to be growing. So then ratings would improve. And then obviously, you know, dividends would flow, you know, increased dividends would also flow through over time. So then you kind of almost have the opposite impact that we've had over the last decade or two, where we've had very negative GDP growth, which in turn has worked its way through to very, very low equity ratings, because SA, in my mind, had a growth problem. Which kind of manifests itself in very low unemployment and the like, and all the companies that you spoke about earlier going delisting and going bust. I mean, if you think about our construction sector, you know, that was decimated, many companies fallen by the wayside over the last decade or two. So they are then, I think, so that all of that should then in turn drive better equity valuations and returns. But I also think you need to think about SA in the context of global markets. And I think if all of that, those things start happening, also our country risk premium relative to the US and to other developed markets would also start diminishing, which, you know, if you think about the rally we've seen in SA assets year to date, it hasn't really been driven by offshore equity investors coming into the market. It's, I think in our mind, has mainly been driven by local equity managers and local asset managers bringing some money back from offshore and seeing the opportunity maybe before the international counterparts. And I think if you start seeing GDP growth start, you know, sustainably being a lot better than we've seen in the past, then, you know, we could see another decent leg up in terms of equity returns from South African listed assets.
And which sectors do you foresee, I guess, leading the charge, or at least carrying the equities market, you know, going forward? When we look globally, like in the US, for example, which is one of the markets that people watch the most, as well as in Asia, your technology stocks have been really big drivers of a lot of the momentum that we see there. One could argue that some of that momentum, especially from the Asian side, has filtered through to the local market because of your Naspers and Process dynamic. But I'm a little bit biased in saying this, but it doesn't feel like the TMT sector, you know, here is enough to sort of carry us forward. Yes, you've got the Naspers, but as a broader sector, it doesn't feel like it has enough momentum to carry the local market the way that we see, in other parts of the world. So where do you see the action? Is it financial services, mining, retail? You know, how do you see that developing?
Yeah, so I think it's a bit of everything. I think it's, in my mind, not easy to say there's going to be any one particular sector that's going to be carrying the bulk of the load, although I do think that financial services and the banks, particular if in a rate cutting cycle with lower credit loss ratios, that, you know, alone has been a big driver for bank earnings on a go forward basis. And then if you at the same time starts getting decent GDP growth coming through, then I think that becomes again a bit of a self-fulfilling cycle. Or decent earnings growth, lower credit losses is a good cocktail for banks, and therefore higher dividend payments to shareholders. So I think that's that's an opportunity still to see another, you know, some decent some unlock there on a go forward basis. I think the resource cycle is still a little bit, to a certain degree, still tied to what's happening in China. And I think if you've been listening to what's happening over the last month, that the Chinese government has been trying to put through a whole bunch of stimulus measures to reignite what has been a very weak property market, which traditionally has been a driver of the economy. And I think they've been quite reticent to use the stimulus lever that they've used in the past, which has traditionally been gross fixed capital formation and big, you know, capital heavy projects, because I think what it happens if you carry on with that same recipe, you end up with a lot of excess capacity in that market, which I think is to a certain degree holding them back at the moment. So I think a bit of their stimulus is probably going to, you know, be a little bit more consumer focused, and hence you've seen our diversified commodities still be quite subdued despite what, you know, the stimulus measures that have been announced. But I think, be that as it may, we'll be quite a way into the downturn in commodity markets. So one doesn't know exactly the timing of that, but I think there is a bit of opportunity or room for that to be better on a go forward basis. But I think where we see a bigger opportunity really is in a lot of these mid cap counters in South Africa that have been under researched and under owned within the local market. So, and some of the times a lot of them are a little bit too small for some of our larger peers within the asset management context to invest in them on a meaningful basis just due to liquidity, et cetera. So that's where we've been kind of putting our chips behind from an active, you know, positioning. And we think there's a big opportunity there. A lot of the performance that we've delivered over the last 3 years has come from some of those companies in that mid-cap space. If you think about a company like Grindrod, which has been one of our top performers over the last 3 years, we got into that very early. We got into PPC at the very low levels, which has done very well for us. And also some other companies like Raubex and WBO also, and another small company like Altron. So that's just a bit of a flavor of, you know, the types of opportunities that we've taken within the fund. And we still see a whole bunch of other companies, smaller companies within that same sort of, you know, template that are still very cheap in our view. And there's still opportunity for those to improve materially on a go-forward basis as the economy improves and consumer spending comes back as the rate cutting cycle takes effect.
Because I'm biased in this particular respect towards TMT, you know, your take on that particular sector, you've already mentioned a counter like Ultron as, you know, one of those possible bright sparks.
Yeah, so I think obviously if you think of TMT in SA context, obviously NASPAS and Prosus are the gorillas in that sector. But I mean, we can park that for a while. And, you know, outside of that, I think similar to construction, you've probably seen also a whole bunch of companies fall by the wayside if you've been covering the sector for long enough, like I've been. You know, there's smaller companies like Datacentrics, et cetera. Those have all disappeared from the listed environment. But, you know, Ultron's been the one company that has been around. It obviously went through a period where it unbundled Bytes in the UK, which was enormously successful and unlocked a huge amount of value for shareholders. And post unbundling of Bytes, and when we took over here at Ashburton, I think Ashburton, and then the Ultron share price had, you know, was languishing below 10 Rand at a point in time, which we thought was way underestimating the growth potential in that business and, you know, just in, and also the valuation opportunity in Netstar. And, you know, I think over the last year or two with the new CEO at the helm, has done great work in just cleaning up that whole business. And we've seen, you know, Netstar's trajectory start improving materially. So that's kind of seen the rating come back into that business. And that's done very well for the portfolio and for investors. So, yeah, that's been an area for the fund that we've been able to take advantage of.
No, it's very interesting, you know, just seeing what's happening, you know, across equities. And I like the fact that you've been able to paint us a nice picture of what's going on in the market and how the various factors, both locally and internationally, they are feeding into that SA Inc. story, and the fact that there's a lot of value to be gained from some of those more small to mid cap, you know, types of counters that you know, that you see there. Perhaps one of the places where we could end off today's discussion, Charles, is the team, you know, that you have in place. You mentioned it earlier on, and it's been, you know, a theme through the conversation, the fact that you guys took over the last 3 years. Could you talk to us, maybe give us a little bit of color just around, I guess, the makeup of that team and whether that is a structure, you know, that we continue to see holding the fort at Ashburton, you know, for the foreseeable future?
Yes, I'm happy to do that. So there's no escaping the fact that a decent portion of our team has worked together for many years prior to Ashburton. So we understand each other well. We work very well together. Most importantly, in my mind, we understand the value of work ethic and treating each other well, and also having a passion for equity analysis and equity research. I think that to me is a massive driver of success in what we do on a day-to-day basis. We don't just come to work to earn a salary. It's actually have a real passion for equities and you know, equity research. So I think that's been a big driver, and Patrice, our CIO, and myself, as well as Daniel Maswasveri, worked together at Sunlum for many years, as well as our head of quants, Matthew John, who's been involved in developing our systems, etc. So we've all come across together and been instrumental in driving the process and getting the process up to speed here at Ashburton. And then we've hired you know, Lesiba, who runs our property portfolio out of Joburg. He's been in Ashburton for a few years before we got here. So he's been around, but he's also part of the team. And then we've hired Luresha Chetty, who looks after a lot of our industrials for us, ex-SPG Securities on the sell side, who did a stint at Aspen as the investor relations, but also has a great passion for equities and has been a fantastic addition, as has, you know, Garth Barry, who looks after our commodity sector and many of the commodity names, who's come across from Nedbank Securities. So, yeah, we've got a team of five at the moment. We're having a lot of fun in the market, keeping us on our toes. We are going to make mistakes from time to time. We don't get everything right. I think that's always the amazing thing of managing equities and equity research, is that you're continuously learning on a day-to-day basis. And what we really try and do is kind of not make the same mistake twice. So we always want to be learning. want to be learning from our mistakes, and where we make mistakes, we want to make sure that they're as small as possible, really, and get our position sizing and risk management correct. And I think we've done quite a good job of that without having taken any major baths over the last 3 years. So, yeah, that's a little bit of a flavor for our team. I think maybe as AUM grows over time, we may incrementally add a staff member or two in terms of the equity team. But we're quite comfortable where we are at the moment. We're sticking to our circle of competence, and we are having fun.
All right. I think that's a good place for us to end, with a team that is having fun and, talking to Shaw just around what's going on at Ashburton Investments, especially in terms of their equities fund, giving us a flavor of what's been going on. Restructure 3 years ago, and the company just, to giving us some insight into the fact that 3 years later, with a new team, that they have been able to perform, quite well, getting some, like I said, a flavor of what's happening. I believe that Shaw was talking about the fact that, you're looking at returns roughly. I'm going to use roughly because, Shaw didn't have the exact numbers for us, but looking in that ballpark of around 14% or so, and then also giving us some insight into the fact that this, in an environment where you have a lot of asset managers weighting their portfolios towards offshore assets, Ashburton has decided, to focus, on South Africa as having that as the core focus, and also, being bullish around some of the opportunities in the space, particularly when it comes to, small to mid caps. Some of the call outs in terms of sectors, he says, the likes of financial services are likely to, continue to do well, though he does say that you can't necessarily peer in a crystal ball and say, which sectors will necessarily be the drivers. But at least for now, it looks like your financial services sector is going to do well, especially with a better growth outlook for the SA economy, and also a turning of interest rates. Also, good just to understand, how the team is set up there. He was just giving us some insight into the structure of the team, and the fact that this is a group that has had history together, and they've brought that to bear over at Ashburton, and they're going to keep us going forward. Anything else, Shaw, that perhaps we left out or that you want to highlight before we let you go?
No, that's it on my side. So, just to kind of maybe point out that this, in terms of our interview today, was more speaking specifically about Ashburton equities, South African product. Ashburton does have a multitude of international or global products, both within the equity and multi-asset space. So, not a one-trick pony. So we understand that investors, value diversification. It makes sense to own some offshore assets within your portfolio, and we do have avenues for that within Ashburton still to provide investors with that international diversification. Just obviously the focus of our podcast today would have been on our South African equity products specifically.
No, and most certainly, I think we're going to do our best to get you back so that you can give us a sense of some of the opportunities that are available and how you guys have structured yourselves or positioned yourselves when it comes to some of those international offerings, and where you see the trends going, and where you see some of the opportunity. So that's been it for today. We have been in discussion with Shaw de Villiers. He is the head of equities over at Ashburton Investments. Shaw, thank you so much for being with us today.
No, pleasure. Thank you for everyone. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter with hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So from myself and the rest of the team, it is a good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.